This podcast of The Treatment is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest, writer-director Richard Shepard, has made a movie, The Matador, that ingeniously sort of uses British crime movies, but also in a way that perhaps Steven Soderbergh did with The Limey and Stephen Frears did with The Hit, takes an iconic figure that we react to in a certain way and places him in a totally different context, and that figure would be Pierce Brosnan. Richard, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
For the people who are just catching up to The Matador, tell them a little bit what it's about.
The Matador is a very odd, dark comic look at a hitman who's played by Pierce Brosnan, who's basically having a nervous breakdown. He realizes that by the nature of what he does for a living, he has absolutely no friends in the world and decides that he's going to make a friend because he's lonely. And he decides that Greg Kinnear is going to be his friend, who he just meets in a hotel bar in Mexico City.
And Kinnear's character is a failing salesman who's in enormous financial pressure.
He's down in Mexico desperately trying to get a job. Pierce is down in Mexico doing a job, which is killing someone. And they're basically the least likely people ever to get together. But I was interested in doing a hitman movie that was not going to be like your normal sort of Chuck Norris, Steven Seagal, USA Network hitman movie, and do it a different way, and to look at a hitman who's not all together but is in fact kind of a mess. And certainly Pierce, who we're used to seeing playing a professional sort of killer totally together, one of the fun things in the movie in a way is seeing him sort of from a different angle than we're normally used to seeing him, although I hadn't thought of him when I wrote the movie.
It's interesting too, because just looking at the movie, again, those movies that we talked about, and even The Long Good Friday, as well as you mentioned before we got started here, Sexy Beast, they're all about these sort of outsized crime figures who are kind of resentful about what they do. And despite the fact they're very tough guys, there's always a moment of vulnerability that they have. And Pierce has an amazing moment like that in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, Sexy Beast was such an inspiration for me when I wrote The Matador, because I saw that movie and it totally rethought the one last heist genre movie, you know, because it came from a character point of view. It wasn't just about the heist. In fact, the heist was the least interesting part about Sexy Beast to me.
It's also about, and in the way that The Matador is, it's about people who are trapped in crime.
Yes. They can't get out. By the nature of what they do, they can't get out. And I was interested in, well, can you rethink the hitman genre a little bit and take it from a different direction from a character point of view? I mean, if you kill people for a living, you can't have any friends. If you have a soul, which is you need to have a friend, you can't kill anyone. So it was sort of – I was going from that sort of inspiration to think of, oh, maybe there's a way to explore that in a sort of funny, odd way. And it's interesting, the script was sort of a thriller that had some humor in it. But once Pierce and Greg and Hope Davis got in the movie, even from the rehearsals, I started realizing, wow, this is actually funnier than it is on paper. It's funnier with them in it. And so we sort of shifted a little and made it a little fun. Not rewriting, but just in the way we filmed it, in the way we thought of it, it sort of became a comedy with some thrills in it and a drama, hopefully, deeper down. But it's interesting once actors come in and you start hearing the lines and seeing how they're going to do it, certain things become funnier or deeper or darker. And so I think from the beginning I was looking at it, well, you know, Sexy Beast is a thriller that has some humor in it. And that was an inspiration when I started writing The Matador. But by the time we were filming it, I was like, well, this is probably a dark comedy with some thrills in it.
So it really found itself as you were shooting it.
Yeah. I mean, and I feel like you have to be open to that. I mean, obviously I cast Greg Kinnear because he's incredibly funny, but he's also got dramatic chops, and he's, you know, there was a real reason I wanted him in the movie, especially since it becomes ultimately an offbeat buddy movie in a way. I want an actor equal to Pierce and all of that. But once it must have been in my mind because Kinnear is so funny, but once he started reading the lines, it's suddenly like, wow, this is funny. This is actually, and I'd be silly to not accept that for what it is. And Hope also, I mean, she was able to take lines on paper that were one thing and make it completely different just in the way she read it. So it sort of was a really liberating thing. We were kind of loosey and goosey. And the fact that we didn't have a studio behind us, it was Bob Yari financed the movie, and we were kind of on our own. We didn't have to answer to a lot of people creatively for what we were doing. So we were kind of on our own a little bit and able to experiment. And some of the funnier things in the movie were sort of improvisations on the set. There's a scene where Pierce walks through the lobby in his underwear, which has been a clip they keep showing, ruining it completely, but whatever. But it's one of the funny, it was one of the funnier things before it was overexposed. But Pierce is walking through the lobby in his underwear and cowboy boots looking like a mess. And that wasn't in the script. That was just something I came up with the day before. There was a sort of a comic freedom that we were attempting occasionally that wasn't in the script. That was just about our feeling what the movie was becoming. Even David Tattersall, who shot the movie, you know, we were going for stark frames. He shot it widescreen. It's an intimate movie, so we wanted to give it a big look. And we were also commenting on these sort of hitman movies where they're always in foreign countries in these exotic locations and it's always widescreen. And we kind of were playing the opposite of it. Instead of them, you know, Pierce on a roof killing someone, it's Pierce on a roof having a nervous breakdown, you know. But we were going for a specific sort of look. But as we were going, Tattersall kept saying, you know, I have to light this a little brighter than we initially planned because it's so funny that we're missing things. And that's interesting. I mean, you know, it didn't turn into the ultra-bright comedy, but it was – we all had to adjust a little bit from our initial expectations just because we didn't want to lose stuff.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to Richard Shepard. He's the writer-director of the really great new film, The Matador. One of the things that really strikes me about the movie, it reminds me actually so much of The Hit, is that it's so much about loneliness. I mean, you two people against walls, basically. And despite the fact there's all this stuff going on around in Mexico, we can hear all this stuff. It's about two incredibly alone people. And you're talking about Kinnear. One of the things is really interesting to watch in the movie too. His takes, it's sort of, he's listening to this and he doesn't want to believe it, but he has to believe it.
I love The Hit. I do think that all of those movies, Slimy, Sexy Beast, and The Hit and Long Good Friday have an element of sadness to them, because once you get to know these guys, they're kind of, in a way, a little pathetic, you know? And so I was definitely interested in that, but it is a movie at the end of the day about two guys who need each other. They don't realize it in the beginning, but they actually need. Pierce needs a friend. He needs someone. And Greg needs some help, too. He needs someone to help clarify some things in his life. And I was interested in, with Kinnear's part, to make a normal guy, a guy who could be any of us, really. He's married. His business is in trouble. He's lost a kid, he and his wife. He's in some financial difficulties. Things are really stacked against him. And when you get pushed into a corner, what do you do? And one of the questions asked in the movie is, would you hire a hitman to kill off your business competition? Because that's what Pierce does. He's a corporate assassin. And Kinnear is faced with this choice, like, do I hire someone to do something for me to get a job to change my life? Will I go to that dark place to survive? And I think in the world we live in the Enron world we live in the sort of in the Bush administration that we live in, and seeing people just being sleazy, really taking the lowest road for their own success, I think it's interesting as a character to see a guy who's tempted because he sees everyone around him doing it. And so I was going for – I mean, I think that's one of the things that certainly at Toronto and Sundance and the film festivals we've been going to, people – the audiences have responded to, that it's funny. The movie's funny, but there is a humanity to it, and some questions are actually raised.
I guess what's fascinating about it to me too is just that it's you mentioned James Bond. We talk about kind of the iconic weight that somebody who's played James Bond for four movies has. This is a movie about the emotional repercussions of doing that kind of work. So it's a movie that asks the questions that – even Fleming never asked about James Bond.
Well, I mean, it's so interesting because Pierce came to me. Usually a director is grovel, especially certainly an independent director like myself who's never had a breakout movie. You're groveling to actors through their agents' assistants just to get them to read the script. Pierce found the script as a writing sample because I was trying to get a job at his company doing another writing gig. And that's how he got hold of the script. And he actually came to me and said, hey, I read this and I'm interested in it. And it kind of was like he had never crossed my mind. Of all the actors in my head, he hadn't crossed my mind, even though once you see the movie, it's almost impossible to imagine anyone else doing it. And the movie wouldn't be as good with anyone else, A, for his performance, but B, because of the baggage he brings. I mean, it's one of the cases where the baggage he brings is an actual asset to the movie that the Matador is.
Because even especially with that terrible last James Bond movie. Whoops. But anyway, by the way, you're talking to Richard Shepard. His new movie is not a James Bond film. Yeah. It's The Matador with Pierce Brosnan and Greg Kinnear. What that movie attempted to sort of deal with that. I know that
Pierce wanted to make those films darker and more interesting, and I think that he was up against a wall of what the producers wanted. But I think he responded to this. Ultimately, we never talked about James Bond at all when we were making this movie. I mean at all, other than my saying, look, I want you to have a mustache and some gray in your hair and a little skinny body with a pot belly, and I never want to see you in a suit because I want to go against the image we're used to seeing.
Also, those suits are armor for him.
Yeah.
And seeing him in an open-neck shirt makes him a different guy.
As a director, I'm a huge believer that wardrobe is one of the most creative choices you can make, and it really helps an actor find his role. And for Pierce, I didn't want him to be in suits. I didn't want him to feel comfortable to fall back on sort of the sorts of roles he's been playing.
It's kind of amazing that those suits actually change his posture.
His posture is totally different in our movie. His walk is different. It's fantastic. Actually, the costume designer, Kat Thomas, had done Kill Bill. And the reason she got the job on The Matador, she said two things in the interview. She said, I don't want to see Pierce in a suit, which is what I believe. And she said, I want everything that he wears to be a half size too small.
Absolutely. You can see that.
It's fantastic.
And those shoes, too, even. They give him this weird walk.
But I think – so we never talked about Bond, but for me it was about – we always talked about Julian Noble, the character he plays, finding this character. And it wasn't until I was editing the movie, and this is really true, when I had enough distance from shooting it, that I was able to look at it and go, wow, we are really referencing certain Bond things as well. We are really commenting a little bit on Bond beyond what just the Matador is. And it was not intentional, even though – certain things became – like Ralph Kent, who did the music to Sideways. And
he works with Alexander Payne a lot.
I've worked with him a lot on my little films too, and he's amazing. But, you know, Ralph said I would love to have some John Barry-esque sort of musical things.
And he gets some fanfares in it.
Yeah. When we're seeing Pierce doing assassinations and stuff, which I thought was great. But we certainly didn't want to – once Pierce came on board, I crossed out a line in the script that actually had Kinnear's character saying, what are you, James Bond, at one point, which of course would have taken us out of the film. But it was in there. I mean, subliminally, clearly, I was thinking about that when I wrote it. I mean, it was in this original script.
Well, we were talking before, and one of the things that I've always thought about Pierce Brosnan is – I think about the moments where I was saying to you before, he feels to me like a sponge that he expands or contracts based on the material. And it's interesting. The material asks something of him more. Even the movie like Nomads, which people don't really know him for, or The Long Good Friday, yeah, where he's a boy assassin who has the most lethal smile, yeah, and doesn't have a single line. Or in this, when the material asks things of him, he actually responds to it.
Well, I mean, he's one of those actors who, by the nature of the type of role he's played in his biggest movies, people seem to sort of put him in, he can do that really well, but I don't know if we'll give him something else. And, you know, he plays Bond and he's the Thomas Crown Affair movies and After the Sunset. He's always sort of slick and put together and people just sort of accept him for those.
And also two steps ahead of everybody else.
Right. And what I liked about him for this movie, and when we've talked about, once he said, hey, I'm interested in this, I flew out to LA to meet him and in person, and we talked, and I said, listen, are you really willing to do all of the stuff that this script asks? Because you can't do it halfway. You have to be vulnerable. You have to be unsmooth and unslick. In fact, that's the whole character, is that we're seeing someone who on the appearance looks slick but really isn't, is really kind of pathetic.
Although the thing is, actually, in the costume he makes this clear, somebody who thinks he's slicker than he actually is.
Exactly. And Pierce was excited about that, and I think that's why he wanted it. But, you know, I think by the nature – when an actor picks a role, he's sort of picking the type of career he wants to have. You know, sometimes you have to earn a living and you take whatever job is there. And sometimes if you're James Bond, you get to pick the roles you want to play. And I think he was coming to a period – he hadn't yet – when he said yes to the Matador, he didn't know he was not doing Bond. But I think he certainly was looking for a challenge. And when you do Bond movies, you have enough money to say, hey, I'm going to go make no money for 4 months and make a little movie. And if it's bad, no one will ever hear of it. And if it's good, it could actually rethink my career a little bit, which it has done for him.
We'll take a break and talk a little bit more about this great new movie. It's The Matador. It's writer-director Richard Shepard is here. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest is Richard Shepard, writer-director of the film The Matador with Pierce Brosnan. And we talked about a great moment, and I'm fascinated by it too, because the mustache makes us look at his face differently. Makes me pay attention to his mouth in a way I never had before. You talked about seeing a scene that for me is actually a sort of a real grace note, and seeing something in him when you saw the film projected for the first time.
Well, we shot it. You've shot on 35, but we never got to see film dailies because we were shooting in Mexico and we also didn't have the money. So we were watching video dailies the whole way through, and we cut on Avid. So I never really ever saw the movie projected until we had an answer print. And there's a scene in the movie where Pierce shows up 6 months after meeting Greg Kinnear in a bar in Mexico City and basically spending 2 days with him, shows up 6 months later at Greg Kinnear and Hope Davis's house in Denver. And it's really the last person Greg ever expected to see walking into his house. And Pierce basically says, I'm in trouble, and I've come here because you're my only friend. And all during editing, I thought he did a great performance, you know, and we picked a take that I thought was great. And then when I was watching the answer print and saw it on screen, I just was able to notice just a little sliver of tear in his eye, not a full tear, which would have made that completely sappy, but just something, and it was just a glimmer of it, and it was such a subtle thing. And I remember being on the set being moved when I watched it live, and then during the editing I just considered it for what it was. But then it was a nice surprise. Usually when you watch an answer print for the first time and you've only seen video dailies, the only surprises are that some shots are out of focus. This was actually a nice surprise, but indicative of sort of Pierce fully went for the performance. He was unafraid. He tried a lot of the funnier, more interesting things were ideas we came up with on the set. He was fearless.
What I like about that scene, too, is that even as he sort of wells up a little bit, he's also smiling. He can't believe this has happened
He
to
can't
him.
Believe he's actually admitting that he has a friend, that he needs a friend, that he's even feeling emotional. I mean, there's so much going on there. And it was fun talking about the movie with the actors, because even though the movie's funny and subversive, I think, in its humor, I hope, we almost never talked about the humor elements of it. We only talked about the character stuff and the sort of deeper elements of it. And that's what both Kinnear and Brosnan were interested in, actually, to talk about. And so I was lucky as a filmmaker, because I think the movie wouldn't have worked nearly as well if it was just sort of treated as just a comedy.
You touch on some of the stuff in this movie and the same setting in Mexico City, the movie Mexico City. And I sort of wondered if that gave you some inspiration for some of this stuff too, including working in Mexico City.
Well, I made this little million-dollar thriller down there, and I wrote this film as sort of a guy who'd been to Mexico twice, and I wrote a little thriller about basically Mexico being a horrible, dangerous place. And I went down there, and about 2 days into filming, after being there for a month of pre-production and then 2 days into filming, I realized that I had completely written a movie that may work as a little thriller but was completely wrong about Mexico City. It was just taking the most gringo point of view about what Mexico City is like.
It's a very xenophobic movie, isn't it?
It is. But it was written from someone who I just wrote this thriller and I hadn't really lived there.
Because the movie, The Matador to me seems to be really a response to that.
It was completely. I said, the film I'm making now is not going to work. That I was 2 days into shooting. I said that about Mexico City. And then I said, I'm going to write another movie, actually, that can try and capture Mexico correctly. Because while Mexico is a dangerous, crazy place, it's also a lively, brilliant, beautiful, smoggy, dirty, fantastic, colorful, warm. It's everything. It's like New York. I love the city now. But let me tell you a quick funny story. When we were about to start shooting The Matador, the LA Times had a cover story in their magazine about how dangerous Mexico City is. In fact, the cover story was the most dangerous city on earth. This was like a week before Pierce and Greg were going to come down, and I really was afraid that they were going to not come down. I mean, it was a scary article. It was basically like, again, a totally false view of what Mexico is. Now, of course, I know Mexico. I love Mexico. I'm like, this article's crap. It's totally wrong. So Greg comes down, and he says, you know, Richard, I read that article, and I got to say I was a little nervous about coming down. I said, well, Greg, don't worry. They're only interested in kidnapping mid-level businessmen. And Greg says, Richard, I'm playing a mid-level businessman. You know, I mean, shooting in Mexico turned out to be a blast. The people there were so warm. There's a great, vital film community going on there. There's an older film community that, you know, Mexico had a big industry in the 40s and 50s and 60s. So a lot of
just where Buñuel worked, as well as many other
without
people.
A doubt. And there's a lot of our crew, our older crew, had been working for years and were incredibly experienced. And then some of the younger crew were people who had been working with Alfonso Cuarón and Moros Peros and all of these interesting stuff. So there is a lot of energy going on. But like any city that's complex and both dangerous and lovely at the same time, there's great art coming out of there, both in film and in writing and in theater and in music and art. And architecture in Mexico City is amazing. So it was really an inspiration for us to be down there and for me to have a second chance in a way. Well, my whole career is a little bit about second chances. So
how do you mean, Richard?
Well, when I was 24, I was given an opportunity for my first movie. It was called The Linguini Incident.
With David Bowie and
Roseanne Arquette. And it was a romantic comedy that was not romantic or funny.
But in ways, we should say my guess is Richard Shepard's new movie is The Matador, but The Linguini Incident is also kind of a movie about how sort of crime and disappointment kind of intersect.
Yeah, thank you for trying to find some correlation between
this movie. Thank you for calling out that I'm reaching.
Listen, The Linguini, if I could direct The Linguini Incident today, I might actually be able to make a halfway watchable movie now that I know what I'm doing. But I made this movie at 24 and 25, and it was a disaster. I mean, it was a disaster critically. It was a disaster in the box office. I mean, it really was amazing because Hollywood will give a break to a first-time filmmaker on the hope that they'll be great. But if you've made a movie that isn't great as your first film, significantly not great, it is hard to get a second film. They're not so excited to give you a second chance. It's like you had your chance and there's 50 other people, 100 people, 2,000 people online to get their chance. And I really got crushed by it. I mean, one day I'm getting calls from every single agency and being taken out to lunch and being written about in Variety. And when you're 24 years old, it goes to your head. No one had seen the movie. I was totally thinking, oh, well, I'm going to write my own ticket here. And
when were you able to see the movie for what it was? At what point did that occur to you?
Well, I spent 2 years very depressed after that movie because I couldn't get any work. And I started deciding I was going to kill the producer because he had recut the film. And I thought that would actually solve my problems by actually murdering him. And I figured it out so perfectly how to kill him that my then girlfriend got really kind of scared, and she said, you need to go make another movie so that you don't go to jail. So I ended up making a little $50,000 movie called Mercy that Sam Rockwell was in, and it finally I had a movie I was proud of, and I kind of was able to move on from there. Even though no one saw that movie, at least I could show it to people and not be embarrassed. But I've subsequently seen Linguini Incident, and I'm able to say, well, I know I was trying certain things there, and I know why I failed. I was ultimately scared of everything. I was scared of actors, which I now am the total opposite of. I now love actors for what they do and can give. But when I was younger, I was – NYU never taught you about directing actors. And so suddenly I was directing actors, and I was nervous about rocking the boat. And so I was playing it very safe. But when you play things very safe, you can't ever soar. You can't succeed if you're not willing to fail. And I also – as a first-time filmmaker, and I think this happens to a lot of filmmakers, you get so protective of your material that you don't even want to change things that aren't working. And so while we did screen The Linguini Incident once or twice while we were cutting, that was about it. And, you know, The Matador, we screened it every single week. I mean, talk about changing your attitude. To me, it was now like I have to show this every week and start hearing from audiences and hearing what people are getting or liking or not liking or what's boring. Sometimes you listen and sometimes you don't, but you have to at least get that out in the open.
It's got to help you, too, to have actors who are really relaxed about what they do.
Well, that's true, but I think they get relaxed by the environment that they're in. And to me, subsequent to that first movie I made, I got to work with Sam Rockwell. I got to work with Adrian Brody and Maura Tierney and do some TV as well. And so by the time I got to The Matador, to me, it's such a great situation for me because it's a reintroduction in a way to the business because all these little movies I did, not many people saw. So here, in a way, is my first movie, except I'm not a real first-time filmmaker. I have some background and some history. So I was able to hopefully provide an environment for Pierce and Greg and Hope to do the great work that they did. And I only just feel bad for David Bowie and Roseanne Arquette, who are good actors, who are actually pretty good in the movie, but it would have been a lot better had I just actually been competent in what I was doing.
The first-timer, not first-timer director,
right.
Writer-director we're talking to is Richard Shepard. His new movie is The Matador with Pierce Brosnan and Greg Kinnear. It's The Treatment. You were talking about the sort of great cocoon you had in being in Mexico, where you were away from everybody, and how that really helped to inspire, too.
You know, when you're on a Hollywood film set or a film set in any major city where agents and publicists and friends can come and gather, sets sometimes become a little bit of a party. And agents show up because they want to have lunch with the star and make sure that that they're not going to leave them and all of that other stuff. And being in Mexico, no one really wanted to visit us. Pierce and Greg's agent, the CAA jet, I think, landed for about 2 seconds. They sort of said, hey, we love you, and then took off. And I don't even know if they got off the plane. So we were kind of left alone, and we didn't have a studio behind us. But it gave us a freedom because there was no sort of other eyes on the set other than us, other than the producers and me and the creative team. We didn't have people watching Pierce do stuff he's never done before, which might have made him a little self-conscious. Maybe, maybe not, but it might have. I don't know if he would have walked through the lobby in his underwear and cowboy boots if, you know, a phalanx of CIA agents were there, even though they were completely supportive of him in the movie. It's just sort of a psychological thing, being away and being free to try stuff. Because we knew, hey, if it doesn't work, no one's ever going to see it.
It must give you this sense, too, of that world you're trying to create in the movie, where everybody's away from everything anyway. But you were also telling me that you shot everything down there. You shot the Budapest stuff there. You shot even the Denver stuff there.
Yeah, we shot the whole movie there. We shot Denver in the snow there, which is, trust me, not the we had to use all the ice in Mexico City to make snow. You couldn't get a margarita that evening. It's true. It was incredible production design by Rob Pearson. We had just a great team to make that happen. It was a budgetary thing at first, but at a certain point, they said, you know, we can go to a cold weather place and do the Denver stuff and maybe the Budapest stuff, go to Montreal, but you'll have to cut your shooting days to pay for that. To me, we didn't have a lot to begin with, and I didn't want to do that because to me, it's such an actor's movie. There's no car chases. It's all about the actors. And since it's all about performance, I just never wanted to feel like I was going to say to any of those three actors, hey, we have to move on because we got to get on a plane and go to Montreal. You know, that was never what I wanted to have to say and never did. I wanted to be able to give them the extra take if they needed it, and I was willing to see. I said, if we can do it all in Mexico, let's do it. But it also helped us because it's a movie about loneliness and being away from home. And even though we all had a great time down there, you are a little out of sorts. You are not at your home. You are away from things. You can't just go into a pizza place and get a slice of pizza or go to a restaurant and just order a hamburger. In Mexico City, you're kind of going to the rhythms of that own city. So
sure.
you're away from the things that make you completely comfortable. And it did infuse the movie a little bit. You know, there was a time when we were going to shoot it in Spain because they were going to offer some crazy tax break. And I said, no, it has to be Mexico. It's right for so many reasons, both visually, which was really important to me, but also I just knew psychologically there was something about that city that I knew was going to be right for these actors to get into the roles they were playing.
My guest is Richard Shepard, writer-director of the new film, The Matador. Richard, thanks so much for doing
this. It was great. Thanks, Elvis.
Our technical director and editor is Bob Carlson, with technical assistance from Blaszczyk Wojciech at Carnegie Recording Studios in New York. Mary Holdridge is the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
You've been listening to KCRW's The Treatment. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including The Business, a look deep inside the business of entertainment with Hollywood's top dealmakers, filmmakers, moguls, artists, and agents. Hosted by Claude Brodesser. Check out the podcast of The Business at kcrw.com.